Hey guys, give me one sec.
Well, while that's happening, maybe I can tell you a little bit about my name, João Carlos Medeiros Pacheco Souza. Or should we wait for Al?
Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you spell that out in the Skype box?
Yeah, sure. Let's see, Skype box. Let me find it. I've never done Skype before. This is my first time, so just looking for... What would it be under?
Well, on the screen, you should have maybe three little squares with each of our avatars. And then at the bottom of the Skype square, there should be like a little chat box.
I don't see it. Maybe if I go big. Nope. Well, it's J-O-A-O Carlos. No, I'll keep on looking. Maybe if you type something to me.
Yeah, I put in some text already, so maybe see if you...
That's crappy.
Do you see a screen with our three images?
Not your faces, but images, yeah.
Oh. Okay, so right below that?
Okay, got it. I got it all now, yeah. So... S-O-U-S-A. Not related to John Philip.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like João John, which means God is gracious. Carlos means free man. And then de Medeiros is cool. It means M-E-D-E in Portuguese is mud, which is fear. So, of maker of fear, or of to be to make afraid, and then Pacheco is I haven't been able to find a meaning for that. The closest I could get is Jewish people in Europe used to sometimes change their names, and that's a name that they used, and it means plum tree. And then Souza means rocks or stones. Which is kind of cool because I didn't know that before I made my email address, João Souza Rocks.
I like that.
Huh. You're the second person I've known that as J-O-A-O. You pronounce that João?
João. Like J-Wow almost.
So a friend of mine who had a big impact on me, I was never able to pronounce it, but that was his name, and he's a Freemason. He built his own house in a Freemasonic community, and he went by that. But people, if they didn't call him that, they called him Elvis. So I called him Elvis.
Nice.
I think it's frustrating for him to keep repeating how to pronounce his name to people.
Yeah. That's why I don't use it. People often put an L at the end. Yeah, it was changed for me when I started grade school.
Hmm.
Yeah, I even have like my real name is João, but the bank knows me as John. But I don't have any ID that says John on it, except for bank ID.
Right. Although, like. That's one situation where if you're trying to explain it to somebody why it's a different name than you're saying, you're like, oh, okay, yeah. So I was looking, so your friend choosing Millennium, and the one, the Human Essence one is Elisa, and I was wondering if Elisa was like the female version of Alicia, because I went down this whole chain of synchronicity with Alicia in the Old and New Testament, and connecting it to 2001, because in Give Us Barabbas, which was a Hallmark made-for-TV movie, David Bowman plays Alicia, and so I was going through this whole with that, but But Lisa means God. God is my God is a vow, which is a kind of a weird thing to say in a way. That your God itself is a vow. I wasn't really completely sure what to make of that. But it's a form of Alice and Elizabeth. But another name for Dido in mythology. Okay. Oh, and here it has it as completely different meaning on this site. It has from the Blessed Isles mythology, Dido, Dido. You know, wow. I don't know.
So, have you guys been recording for the whole hour?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm sorry that happened. I'm actually at my job right now. I ended up calling my internet service company, and they said they're doing work on the lines, and I won't have internet till 5 p.m. So I was like, wow, thanks for giving me a heads up on that. So I called my job, and I was like, hey, can I swing by and use your internet? So.
How the hell are you, well, Alan? It's good to hear your voice.
Absolutely.
Good to hear your voice. Hey, John. It's good to speak to you.
Nice.
So, Alan, if you want to just quickly try and catch up with something we were looking at here, just posted a link to IMDb on the character that John has been communicating with, and just, like, take a quick perusal through the titles and characters in her series of films. It's really like an interesting set of like each one corresponds to the previous one through these 14 titles.
Okay, I'm looking it up now. Michaela J.
Yeah.
So
the idea is you're actually speaking to this person?
Yeah, I know her.
You know her, okay.
She's a friend of mine.
John, where do you live? I'm curious.
I'm in Toronto, Canada, downtown.
Oh, okay, cool.
If the CN Tower fell down, it might hit me in the head.
I'm trying to load this IMDb page. It's taken a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's just like Passageway, Crown Heights, Bliss, Living with the Dead, Andromeda. First Wave, The Outer Limits, like Strange World, Millennium, Brooks, like Welcome to Paradox. Welcome to Paradox and Millennium. I love it. It's just the whole thing is just like completely full of cool correspondences.
So should I ask how do you know her, John?
She was an acquaintance for a long time, and lately we sort of connected. We're just friends, you know, hanging out. So and when I got invited to the Sync Book, or sorry, to Always Record, I thought, well, I'll try a little project to cut my teeth on the synchromysticism stuff.
Ah, you know, very cool.
It's more serious than just, you know, looking around and paying attention to things.
Now, let me ask you, so then you know this person on a personal level. Have you found that there is correspondences with her life or her personality? Because having spoken, this is what...
Yeah, but I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You can, but you can confirm that that's the case.
Oh, my Lord, yeah. So yeah. In so strange ways, like personally her and her, like, you know, I watched, while I was watching all this, all her films and stuff, I was watching them, you know, until like 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and then I watched this thing on YouTube, which was her doing like a promo video for herself, and it was like, almost like a pow, sort of going from one way, one lens to another. Because all of a sudden it was her, where before none of those people were her. But in some way,
I understand. Yeah, exactly.
Are,
yeah,
you know,
we had Will Morgan had done all the videos, all the movies of Andras Jones.
Yeah, I watched it.
And, you know, at this point, I know Andras for a few years now, pretty friendly basis, and it's very interesting to see how this relates to an actor or actress who obviously their whole job is to take on the role of someone else. And yet certain aspects of their personality come through. And then the place for synchronicity really seems to come in is that you might have a certain aspect of your personality that you bring into whatever character you portray, but you can't control the script that you're receiving. You can't control the words that are coming out of your mouth. And when certain things like that start having synchronicities with things in their personal life, or even things that happen later in their life, it becomes a whole interesting, it just becomes a whole other sort of study, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I started a little synchronistic thing, or a little sync thread for myself, right, where I just started writing, you know, places that I've lived, things that have affected my living circumstances when I was living there. Like, I used to live next to a lead factory where they smelted lead and stuff. I used to live next to a coffin factory and a piano factory all at the same time. You know, and I was saying earlier that I come from an island that's a mountain, and my mother's name is Olympia, so I'm from Olympia. I'm from Olympus.
Yes.
JC, John Carlos is my name. I was born a week before Jesus on the 17th. There was where I was living, where there was a lead factory and the smelting plant, and the coffin factory, there is a river that was buried, but it was called the Trinity River, that ran very close to my house, almost underneath it.
Oh, I'm very interested in Trinity Rivers as a guy.
I know that.
But I don't know if you'd realize the correspondence between the lead and the coffin. Are you familiar with the alchemical significance of lead being Saturn?
Saturn, yes.
Yeah, so that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, very. And I lived on the corner of Niagara and Tecumseh, the old Indian. And at the end of Tecumseh was the lead factory, and next to the lead factory there was an abattoir, a place where they killed pigs. It was an interesting neighborhood.
Oh, fascinating! The death of the pig. So you have your lead and Saturn is the equivalent of in Egyptian mythology of Osiris, and his brother is Set, who obviously ends up killing him. Is often depicted as a pig. So you have this sort of Osiris and Set battling it out in your neighborhood.
That's right.
So I want to ask you a question.
What did you say about lead? Did you say something about lead, or am I tripping? Did I hear something about lead?
Yeah,
he said it was a lead smelting factory next to coffin. Next to a place that made coffins. So you have...
Okay.
Lead, Saturn, death, coffins.
So we were talking, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alan, but we were having this thing around the refrigerator and looking at the refrigerator as a time machine and how the refrigerator is the reason why
Indiana Jones was protected
from the nuclear blast was because of lead. And if you look at it, that wouldn't have actually, like, all these people die in their time machines, basically, in Planet of the Apes in 2001. They're basically coffins. So you could take that.
Oh, absolutely,
as a,
yeah.
Okay. So I just had to tie that in there.
Yeah, there's an interesting connection between time travel and death, I think. And again, going with the whole Saturn thing, just to say, is you have this sort of obvious correlation between Kronos. There's the Kronos of Saturn and Kronos of time. So you have this idea of time travel or death are sort of embedded in the archetypes already connected.
Yeah, and then also you could take it that out from the lead, alchemy, you produce gold, and how it's out of death that the spirit is born, right?
In the coffin factory, they used to have underground cavern where they used to keep all the gold and the brass bits for storage.
Of course. Yeah.
And it turned into a. Then it turned into a piano factory after it was a coffin factory. So it went from death to resonance.
So I figured something out here really quick. Just agree in that I think the most interesting thing I see for me personally in that list of her things that she's appeared on is specifically the Millennium episode of Human Essence with the reptilian blood that you were talking about.
Yeah,
I mean I want to watch that, and then I want to take this simple Wikipedia thing of if you see that, Dido, the Queen of Carthage, and her deal, and then compare it to this episode, because the name that she has, Lisa, is the same name as Dido. They actually explains on this Wikipedia page that they come from the same, that even though they don't sound similar, that's where it comes from. And so to do just like a comparison here might be really worthwhile. If there was some, like, because, you know, this is like looking at this list, it's like this whole thing, like, huh, if I'm scanning through it and I'm like, what to go into, because you can't do everything all at once, that's probably what I would pick.
Wasn't there a musician from a few years back, Dido?
Hell
yeah, that's what they're named after. Dido, or yeah.
Okay. Devo?
No, not
good.
Devo.
Oh, okay. Right.
Devo was awesome, though. But yeah, Devo was for de-evolution. But yeah, that woman who like sang with whatever. Yeah, thank you. That's it. Yeah.
How do you say it?
I think they call themselves Dido.
Yeah, I think that is how you probably pronounce it. I don't have any pronunciation key here, so I'm just reading shit.
She's the only singer to have one song go number one 4 times because it's been remixed, and people just love it so much. And every time they just remix it, they just put it right back at number one. It's incredible.
What song is that?
I think it's called Thank You.
Yeah.
It's a real pick-me-up.
You're being sarcastic.
A little bit. I just swear to God, I've heard like 7 different remixes and different versions. There's like the acoustic version, the electric version, the Eminem sample. Like, they chopped that pig up so many different ways and sold you the parts in so many different songs. It's just absurd.
How's it going, Will?
It's like, I want to thank you. You picked up my laundry and you bought me a wine or something like that, and now I can go to work and not be depressed or something like that. It's nice. Like I said, it's a feel good song.
Yeah, where she goes like, it's not so bad, it's not so bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Put your picture on my wall. It's the one that Eminem did.
Yeah.
That's it? Okay. Yeah.
Well, so we get our double M back in there. Nice.
Boom.
Oh snap. So yeah, Okay.
And Michaela's a double M, so yeah, that's what you're saying.
I was thinking this Michaela J reminds me of Michael J. Fox. Speaking of time travel, Michaela J, that's Michael J.
Right.
Yeah. Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And she's a dead ringer for Mia Farrow.
And Kira from Dark Crystal.
Oh, really?
Wait, what
in
did
real
you
life, if, in John, real life, if I were, she definitely resonates with her.
John, if I weren't married, I'd ask you to introduce me. Always had a fascination with Kira from Dark Crystal.
You too, eh? That's funny. My Facebook page right now is Jen. My picture.
Yeah, I saw that last night.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, I wish you luck, putting the shard back into the place.
Nice, thank you. That's safe, dude. That's safe.
Can I ask you a personal, a selfish question, John? I was
excited. About me.
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. Exactly. No. I want to ask. Basically, I was excited to do the show for a number of reasons. One, I mean, I noticed you've been corresponding with me on Facebook for a bit, and I really appreciate the support that you've shown us. But I want to ask, how did you end up finding us, and basically, you know, what were you looking at before, and how did this sort of segue into, again, it's a sort of selfish question, but I'm just really curious to get an outside perspective.
I'll start from the beginning, sort of. About 5 years ago, my life fell apart. I had a house and stuff, and that all went away. My mom died and blah, blah, blah. So I was having like a really rough time. And then I got my computer to work, and all of a sudden my life was in, for about 3 or 4 days straight. It was all about conspiracy and stuff. And I'm not really, like, I was watching it as an interesting. It wasn't like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then that took me to James Corbett, and you were on his show. And that's how I got it. And then I tracked you guys down to have all the Happy Creatures. And then I started listening at Around Rosemary's Baby. And then I listened to everything else before that. And I started in 42 minutes. And it was so great. It was like, I really, really resonate with the stuff that you guys are talking about on this show. Dave is my favorite character. I really like when you start going into your yards and to ferrets and mountains and stuff. It's so cool. Like, you sort of, you half understand and you half don't. It all makes sense. Did I answer the question? Like that?
Oh yeah, I think so. So what about before you found this, what kind of stuff were you looking at?
Well, I'm a carpenter. I sort of wasn't really looking at many things.
Of course, you mean like when I was JC, the carpenter?
Yeah. I was looking at, I was just living, you know? Like, as far as the conspiracy stuff goes, I always knew that everybody's crooked and stuff, but, you know, what can you do? You know, you get your hammer, you make your boxes, you know, you carry on, you go to sleep, you wake up, you have a good time, and that's what life is, right? You know?
chop wood, carry water, right?
That's right. You know, whatever the wood or the water is.
I get sometimes there, I feel a certain responsibility for social action or, you know, things like that. But again, on a personal level, I mean, you're not trying to save the world. You're not going to, you know, take down, you know, politicians or things like that.
Actually,
you're going to find ways to make.
Yes, I am, by spreading love. Right? You know, that's how you do it. Right? That's, you know, you take care of yourself. You spend your money in the right places. You know, you don't go to Walmart and eat at McDonald's, which, you know, keeps you healthy and keeps the world healthy if you're not supporting that kind of thing.
Amen.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's a great
thing. You know, you do what you can, you know, you recycle, you know, you...
you talk to people, you teach kids, you love kids, you love adults, you know. A little while ago, I had a conversation with someone in my family, and I said, you know, I'm still trying to spread the love and stuff. And they said, stop with that love stuff, you know. You just got to go out there and do it, right? And I'm like, I'm not going to listen to you, man.
Yeah, that's where personal responsibility comes in, say, you claim, hey, this is my path and what I want to do and what I find sounds true to me, and don't let someone knock you off that track. I give you a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
Cool. So you spoke about David throwing out his Hebrew stuff. And by the way, David, you're my favorite character, too.
Alan, you're my favorite.
It's interesting that we've become characters, but I think that's what I find most interesting.
Well, his voice is coming out from nowhere, right?
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
I know a little bit more about you guys than some, I guess, but Yeah, you're just voices.
Well, sorry, you threw me off there. Yeah. I wanted to actually ask you, David, I could probably research Google this in 30 seconds, but I actually wanted to ask you about it. You know, there's all this idea of, like, the Masonic connection with Hollywood, you know, for, you know, over and over and over again, this sort of harped-on idea. But there's obviously all these sort of references to Sirius and things like that. And mm-hmm. I had remember reading a few years ago that the Hebrew word Caleb or Celeb, like we get celebrity, not only means star, but also means dog. Is that true?
Oh, I never heard that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, Caleb.
Is it cherub?
No. Like, since, so, C-A-L-E-B or C-E-L-E-B.
Well,
since it's new.
I'm studying tonight, so I'll find out really quickly. About that, and I mean, I have a Hebrew dictionary right here. I could actually just look up celebrity and see.
This idea, this is where we get celebrity is star, right? When we call someone a celeb, you're really calling them a star. It's the same thing as you would call, you would actually use the word star. Well, this is the Hebrew word for star. But the idea that it also could mean dog, I think, is fascinating, that you would have not only this idea of the celebrities actually being, in a sense, our pets, a la the Little Happy Creatures, but the idea that you would be the sort of dog star is sort of a package deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. I haven't heard that before. But here I'm looking up star in my English to Hebrew dictionary, so... give me a second. You guys, go about your...
You know, one thing that I'm getting is the Ark of the Covenant. It had one way of looking at it was that inside is your brain, and on each side they had the winged creatures, and they're sometimes called cherubs, and they would envelop the brain inside. And so that's how I get the cherub thing with celeb, it being like the cerebellum, or, you know, but.
Trippy.
Huh. Did you hear the recent Red Ice with William Henry? He goes into this idea of the Ark of the Covenant as the brain, and basically that the Ark of the Covenant is in the human body.
Yeah, not that particular one, but I've heard a similar rendition.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I can't quite put my finger on it with everything he says, but that's a really fascinating theory to me, that all of these sort of these ideas that basically what he says is that if you really go through the text, the Ark of the Covenant is just sort of one part of it, that you have this case, let's say, but then there are these other sort of holy items that are with it. They call it like the rod of Aaron, the anointing oil. Like, he has these sort of five items, and that he sees these things as sort of pieces of the different aspects of the human body, whether that be like the human spinal column for Kundalini rising up to the brain with its two wings and things.
Yeah, and the oil rises up the spinal column to the brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And when it gets there, you're enlightened, or...
I don't see any word that looks like celeb in relationship to star. I mean, there's a lot of words for star in Hebrew, but I can't actually even find one with Palamed in it. There is, but not celeb, so I don't see that happening with star. But there is what William pointed out about the devotion to God is symbolized by a dog in some traditions. And here you have, Caleb, literally, it's a devotion, wholehearted. So you can make a connection there. But I can still bring it up tonight and see if there's something else to that. Where did you hear that?
I read it years ago, and I actually think it might have been on Chris Knoll's blog. But I, like I said, it was just something I thought about as I was falling asleep last night, and I was like, oh, I hope I remember to ask David tomorrow. Like I said, I could do my own research, but...
Yeah, maybe it was another...
He was, if I remember right, he was saying C-E-L-E-B equals star, and C-A-L-E-B equals dog, which of course, since you don't really have vowels, it would be the same thing.
Okay.
But...
Well, they make a connection to that the dog is a symbol of devotion, and so you could say that. I could pull out the Aramaic dictionary too, but I think that that's probably the extent of that connection, most likely. But still, you know, there's something to the idea of a dog. I mean, a dog is a pretty devoted animal. That's why people, Okay. Interesting. So the I'm sorry, I was looking up stuff in the dictionary and trying to listen to you guys at the same time, but there was a connection being made of the Ark of the Covenant being the human body. Is that what I was hearing?
The head specifically is what I've heard. So inside is basically the power that's inside is your brain, and the two angels or winged creatures or cherubs are the covering of the brain, so sort of like your skull, what's keeping it all together, your body. You know? That's what it was.
Okay. Well, there's the idea of the supernal Adam, and that the dynamics of the Adam are basically how the arc is constructed, like to reflect the same exact dynamics as the human body. So the idea being that the Ark is built in the image of what's built in the image of the Tetragrammaton. So that's the whole, there's a whole chain of technical links between the Tetragrammaton and Yehuda itself, which is where we get Israel, is, how does that work? It's yid hey vav hey with a dalet, and there's this whole basically line of synchronicity between obviously God and man, and then the ark, and that they're all one stream. But the ark itself was supposedly an actual object that was basically built in the image of man. So you could say that if you find a it's one thing to say, yet the Ark is man, and it's another thing to say that man has certain dynamics, and the Ark is constructed as an extension of dynamics. Basically, being if we knew enough about ourselves, and we wanted to build something in form, whatever we built, that if it was close enough to our dynamics, would be another reflection of communication. It's a weird thing to get into, but...
Sure, yeah. But yeah, it's that idea of, is it a metaphor, is it literal, and at what point does the literal become, where even if it is a literal object, is it still not another microcosm, still not another metaphor, whether you intend it to be or not? That's what I always find interesting, is that the artworks that you make are still reflecting the macrocosm. Which I want to take that over to John in a second, but just real quick, David, have you ever seen where they show the Tetragrammaton as essentially a man, as like a stick figure?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the idea that it is, again, God and man, where, like, God sort of is a man. If someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes.
Definitely, you control your own universe, don't you? You know? Absolutely. Nobody can make you feel the way you can or that, or the way you do.
Yeah.
Well, John, I want to take this to you because I've been looking at your works, your carpentry works, which are beautiful, by the way. You're incredibly talented. And so you're essentially making little arcs here, little arcs of the covenant. Do you see what you're putting into your finished product? do you either feel that you're intentionally encoding something, or do you find that it essentially speaks back to you afterwards?
Lately, I've been not intentionally encoding, but I look... right now I'm making an alabaster basket, right? So I got a piece of stone and I'm carving it so that it goes in and out, just like a basket. And I was stuck on where to go, how to do the transition over the lid into the basket. And the way I got out of stuck was listening to the show. You guys talked about the worm Ouroboros. And I saw it. Wow, there it is. It's the worm Ouroboros. That's what I'm going to do. And then when I look back at my stuff after putting on the sink lens, I totally saw that it was all like, figure eights on its side, the symbol for Mars, the symbol for Venus, all kinds of stuff like that.
I noticed you have one where you use, you incorporate like flower of life and things like that. So is this at some point you start to incorporate the symbolism into it, but the things you had done before were?
Well, I started with the flower of life because I was practicing a technique, right, in my work. So I got a compass and I started playing the compass, and then I made all these circles and it turned into the flower of life. And I didn't know that it was the flower of life until later when I read about it, or I saw it in other places.
Nice, absolutely.
And I always start with, when I start a carving, I let the piece tell me what it wants to be. You know what I mean? Like, not literally, of course, but, the grain goes a certain way, and so I won't be able to do this or that with it, and stuff like that. I'm a big grain guy. It's all about, like, the wood and how it works, especially since most of my stuff is reclaimed wood, right? So I go to wood shops and stuff, and I ask them for their scraps and things of nice woods that they have. I also get wood from people sometimes. Like somebody will have an old dresser or something that they're going to throw out, but they've had it for a long time, so I'll take a hunk of it and I'll make stuff. I made once a little Buddha out of the stock of an old rifle.
Oh, really? That was out of a rifle?
That's
beautiful message in itself, what you're doing of taking something that was a weapon and turning it into something, a peaceful piece.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, you can find John's work at canadiandipsticks.blogspot.ca. I have, of course, as always, we have it linked up under thesyncbook.com/alwaysrecord. I'll have all of the links here. But gorgeous, gorgeous stuff.
Thank you. I call it dipsticks, Canadian dipsticks, because originally I was just going to use it for my paddles, because I make canoe paddles.
Wow. That's good, dipsticks. Because we need John to be off on our Shit's Creek. Sorry. Sorry, that's a bad pun, but we've actually... We often talk about the river of shit here, so.
Yeah, well, it's going to be Gold Creek soon enough, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
To plant. Turn my Shit Creek into gold. I can't get very far, though. See, that's the thing. That's the value of the shit is that it keeps you moving. As soon as you turn it to gold, you're stuck.
Very alchemical.
Well, it stinks, but at least it's moving. It's like conspiracy theory. I love this Buddha, this little Buddha. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great work, John. I really
thank you.
And I love how you say that, when you find the wood, you don't force upon it. There's like a merger. There's like a relationship between you and the piece, and both sort of come together in the middle to find out exactly where it's going to go. And I think that is kind of something that happens with a lot of films and sync work, is that it's always exciting to be in the middle of a good thread and compiling information and making connections, but you really can't force it.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to announce itself to you. So I like the parallel that you established there.
In high school, I carried a 25-pound piece of soapstone for a week in my knapsack. Pretty weird. Yeah, it turns into what I call a primitive spaceman. It was sort of a guy kneeling with a sort of a face mask kind of you'd have on an astronaut. And so it was very primitive, kind of straight-armed kneeling with an alien kind of head.
So did you feel that carrying that piece around with you for a while, you sort of got a sense for what it was supposed to be? Like, I've spoken to people, the idea that you can say using psychedelics or even some, you know, sacred plant medicine, you know, whether that be, you know, something as benign as marijuana or not, where the idea is that people saying you should carry, you know, put this in a pouch and carry it around your neck for a year, you know, build a bond with this plant and then smoke it or whatever you do with it. I'm curious if you carrying that piece of wood around with you for a while was a similar sort of thing of, you know, finding, like just bonding with that piece and then saying, okay, this is what it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. You know, I say it talks to you, right? The piece will tell you what it needs to be. And so it's not really, you know, the force telling you, hey, man, I want to be a human spaceman. you look at it, and what eventually happens is you get an idea in your head, and it has nothing to do with the stone usually, right? Maybe something with the grain, you know, like I can't carve this way because if I do, then if I'm making the primitive spaceman, then the arm will fall off because the grain is running in the wrong direction. So, but it's more like, you know, you finally decide, oh, okay, that's the best thing that I can do with this. You know, the other thing that my intent when I'm making my things is I like to make art pieces, but most of my stuff is useful things. I make a lot of spoons, a lot of spoons. I make light switch plates. I make canes for old people and stuff like that. I donate a lot of my stuff. Useful things.
I love this cherry spatula with the winding pads of the handle.
Yeah, that is almost gorgeous. Useful. That's a good one. That took a long time. That made me crazy. Always flipping this around because it, you know, it goes in one way and you want it to carry on all the way, and things get in the way, especially in the early parts where you're not really sure where things go. And you flip it over and you think it's something and it's something else. It's cool. That was fun to do.
Wow.
This story stick you have here, this is essentially, this is, you're making like your own version of the Mayan calendar or something.
That's my sink stick, I guess. That's like,
yeah.
I just carve things randomly on it, but it always means something. When I look back, I go, hey, I remember that. I remember that whole story, that little thing. I know what happened there. I know what I was doing at the time. It's cool.
Oh, yeah, I wonder, you know, this is like, it's a sort of form of hieroglyphics, or if we start a secret society, John, we're going to hire you to like encode our history.
Wicked.
We should make a Powell for us to, you know, jump people in too. A good swatting stick.
Oh yeah, this is our initiation paddle.
If you guys send me addresses, I'll send you all you guys sink spoons.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, no problem. I'd love to.
Hold on.
Oh, it goes all the way around like that. I didn't realize. I was looking at the top one, the close-up of this. What is this one called? The one with all the glyphs on it. The maple leaves and the Celtic and Celt knot and all this stuff. Pretty incredible, man. Cool. Bonk in there. Wow. And patience.
Yeah, it takes some patience, some time. Are you talking about the one that has like the four leaf clover and stuff on it?
Yeah, your story stick.
Yeah. It goes all the way around. Yeah. So I see Sarah, and I see coming to Canada, and I see going camping a lot. I see that time that it was raining for 7 days when I went camping. You know, I do a lot. I like to go out and just, you know, backpack. And we have a big park called Algonquin here in Canada.
I don't want to take away from the seriousness of your story, but did anyone ever, when they were kids, watch, I think it was called Romper Room?
Yeah, that's what I was resonating with when I was talking like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is exactly what I was feeling. You were like, and I Sarah, and and I'm like, oh my God, this is like Romper Room.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm big into Tolkien. I really like his books. So there's some Tolkien runes and stuff in there too. Yeah, Tolkien's a pretty cool guy. Have you guys ever read Silmarillion?
I haven't read it. No.
Sort of one of the neat. It's kind of like the Bible, right? So it starts. The story starts with Alundai, and he basically sings the world into existence, or the universe into existence, and he sings the Varda into existence, and they are made to create their own songs, and their songs is what creates us, Middle Earth, which is, you know, whatever. And so everything is created with song. And when the bad guy Neklar comes along, he causes this. He makes the music bad, right? And Alu says that it doesn't matter what you do. Your music is only, your evil is only going to make the music better, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's a cool story.
That was Tolkien.
That's Tolkien, yeah.
That's like the only other thing he's done besides Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit?
No, he's done other things too. Short stories, Tales of Faerie, Gawain and the Green Knight or something.
He hasn't done much more other than Lord of the Rings and
well, no, he was a scholar and stuff. He had his own. He was doing other things also. But yeah, you're right. He didn't do a lot of novels.
I wonder about more of his ideas, because I know, like, he had that dispute with C.S. Lewis on Christianity, obviously, and was kind of frustrated with C.S. Lewis because both of them. So they were two scholars that were both emphasizing the idea of the archetype, right? So they're like, this is a composite character that's like so many other characters. And they looked at Egyptian mythology and all these mythologies and were looking at that story and were just like, it's got all the repeating components. So how could it, you know? And so Tolkien was like, how could that be true for this character then? Like, that kind of negates it, right? And then C.S. Lewis was like, no, but what if he actually existed? And he's fulfilling the same, like, he's hit all this, and he's, like, going through it. But I wonder to myself about Tolkien's actual ultimate feelings on the matter, because it seems like he's just, like, acknowledging the synchronicity there by making his own. Like, he creates his own mythology with the same components. And does it in such a way that's not necessarily as direct, unless if you know what you're looking at, like the Eye of Sauron and what's being expressed out of Sauron, you know, like that it's Gollum, you know, like he creates the Gollum. How that's a Gollum, like his particular take on the nature of Gollum, what that means. It's very direct, but at the same time, he like seems like he likes the veiled aspect, but like that, like he hides it all in plain sight so well. I wondered a lot about him. I wanted to read like his actual philosophical views. It's like C.S. Lewis has the screw type letters or whatever. Like you can read his views, but Tolkien never seems to give you that. I'm just kind of left to wonder.
He has a lot. There are a lot of manuscripts and stuff that you can find of his online. There's like volumes and volumes. His son was the one that actually put the Silmarillion together. Tolkien didn't write the Silmarillion. His son got all his manuscripts and stuff and put it together.
Oh, interesting. The funny thing, when I was traveling in India, one of the guys who I was traveling with was reading that, and I wanted to tell him more, but then I kind of stopped him and was like, I'll read that at some point. You can, because what he was telling me sounded so interesting. The song part, I feel like I remember, and that's just something that's just totally fascinating to me, like just that you punish Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita and the Torah and the Tanakh, the whole thing is meant to be sung. All these texts were meant to be sung. In fact, their musical is really key to, it seems, to understanding what's, you know, the nature of what's being expressed. And then I was just recently looking at in the Think Book 2, who did the color alchemy thing, the tone color alchemy?
That's Ezra.
Super helpful. Like, it had never occurred to me that, like, the G in masonry could be referring to the D note as a note, and all this kind of business. Like, just very, very enlightening. I want to look at that more. I want to find more in that vein, and considering, like, the Caduceus column is what's actually being expressed with the column for like notes and tones and stones and all of that. Is just so awesome.
Yeah, I actually came upon thinking about this again recently, particularly the stones, tones, notes, what he does there, because I have this guy that I work with. He's going to this musician. His name is Victor Wooten, and he was telling me about these two albums he has, and one is called Sword and Stone, which is just like an instrumental album, and then he has another album which is called Words and Tones, which is just taking the S off the front of each of those, and it's the exact same album with someone singing over it with lyrics. So and I'm thinking the idea of that made me realize the idea of sword and stone. When we think about the story of King Arthur, what does it really mean to, when we say pulling the sword from stone, we're pulling the word or the logos, right? We
that's
say
directly Kabbalistic. I could go off about sword and the stone just from stuff I've been looking at recently. Malcolm refers to it as stone. That's like the stone that's been dragged down, you know, to the base. But the sword, its body, is taken as Tiferet. It's the masculine symbol. And so the sword and the stone, it's like you want to separate in order to reunite. That in order for things to come together, they have to be pulled apart. It's just so, like, and I mean, it's an archetypal thing, obviously. I don't know that they were, I mean, it's very possible, but I don't know that they're intending it so specifically to belong to that school. But that's like that's such a potent symbol. But specifically, the fact that the body is a yud with a vav underneath, and you can get a whole, it's thing to go into around the gematria and around the all the symbolism there of. That the yud is also taken as the crown. So basically, you have the crown and sword. If you look in tarot at the Ace of Wands, the way it pictures through the crown, that's taken as like the crown is character, but then there's the false crown of da'at, right? So you have the false knowledge, and so it's and that's where the symbolism of the crown of thorns comes from. it's like a temporary crown. It's like a placeholder or whatever. That this is the king, but the king is, you know, this filler, right? But anyways, that's like...
There's even the idea of rising up the Tree of Life, where they call the Flaming Sword, this idea of traveling up the paths from Malkuth to Heather. So that same idea of pulling the sword out of the stone wouldn't be the same idea.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Hey, Alan?
Yeah?
One of J.R. Tolkien's books is called Sith of Wotan Major.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Wootton Major. So that's kind of funny.
Well, doesn't that tie back into how he pretty much adapted the Ring cycle by Wagner for Lord of the Rings? Because those two mythologies are, you just overlay them, they're basically the same story. And Wotan, maybe being expressed as Wootton, is connected to that.
Have you a version of Odin, isn't it?
Because that's... Yeah. I've never heard, or I've never read anything of Tolkien discussing how he... Because was Lord of the Rings the sword he pulled out of the stone, which is the ring cycle? You know what I mean? Did he extract a sharper, more relevant tale from an existing mythology?
Well, the sword is sort of, anybody can take the sword, right, and use it, no? Or am I, no, you can't, you have to be the king to use the sword, can't you take it out of the stone? Because I was going to say that the ring was made by Sauron, and he controls it, right? Like, it's his ring, and it's nobody else's. Like, you can use it, but it's always, it's being imbibed with his power.
Right.
Right? But for him to use his power, the power that's invested in it, he has to get that ring back. That's the downfall of Sauron, is that he keeps on investing his power in different places instead of keeping it for himself, right? So he'll turn elves into orcs, right? Because that's how orcs became orcs. They were perversions. They were tortured elves. And he puts his power into that and loses that part of his power, so he becomes weaker. And that's in the ring.
Wow. So I read I think I may have told you guys this, but I was trying to find more information on John Lennon contributing to the Holy Mountain and helping that happen. Mm-hmm. And I found an article that was written in, I think, Spanish, actually, and or maybe not. It was written in another language. I did a Google Translate. The article, some of it was really oddly because it's a translation, but one of the parts in it, it was talking about Jodorowsky referring to Yoko Ono as the Lord of the Rings. He was like, I love this girl, she's the Lord of the Rings. And like, and I was like, wow, that's kind of fucking crazy if you think about, like, you know, the nature of the Ring of the Rings is that, like, it's the, like, the highest, it's the darkest evil, like, is he saying that because he, like, broke up the Beatles? But, like, I don't think it's that superficial. I think that he was, like, he was hip to something. I don't know.
Can I just say something? Isn't this story of John Lennon met Yoko Ono, is he climbs this ladder and there's a little magnifying glass, and then he looks through the magnifying glass and sees the word yes? So you have this idea of the magnifying glass is just like a romper room magic mirror, but it's also the eye of Sauron. You go to the eye at the top of the tower, right? You climb the ladder and there's this magnifying glass up there, and that's sort of the eye of Sauron at the top of the peak.
Totally. Yeah, I know a lot about the idea of the magnifying glass at the top of the ladder. But you go all this way, and then it's just to magnify something that you weren't able to see from the lower, you know.
I can see for miles.
Yeah. In the book, the eye isn't so much on the tower. You know, in the movie they put it on the tower so that, you know, you can relate to it better. But in the book, it's just an eye. It's the eye of Sauron. It doesn't necessarily have to be up and about.
Right, it's more like metaphorical, like omnipresent.
Yeah.
Vision, yeah.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and that I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way. Well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. I know you've deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. Eiffel Tower in the Toy Hall, mine to see on clearer days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I could see for miles and miles.